man's health or wholeness in science, that's 120 line 13, is a condition of mind. Mind's body, man, is as whole as its mind is whole. And therefore, what we are concerned with on line 20 is the science of mind healing, the principle of which reverses sense testimony and reveals man as harmoniously existent in truth. Line 22. It doesn't make him so, but reveals that he is so. Truth is that which can never lose a particle of its own wholeness, and therefore, in truth, man is, truth little t, never error. Columbus giving freer breath to the globe, line 30, symbolizes body, man, unrestricted in its universal movement, breathing freely, if you like. On 121.4, we extend beyond the solar system with its Earth to the stellar universe, the cosmos itself. It's all a symbol of the universality and freedom of body. The true idea behind the concepts of astrology and horoscopy are discussed, therefore. Sciences, explanations of the universe, on line 15, where everything is golden in the sunshine of truth's wholeness, is the divine counterfact to the counterfeit explanations of astrography, astronomy, and astrology. In this science, line 22, the greater controls the lesser. That is to say, truth, capital T, is greater than the sum of its parts, or truth, little t. Soul controlling body is the greater controlling the lesser. Spirit controlling its reflection is the greater controlling the lesser. And mind controlling its ideas is the greater controlling the lesser. All of which leads us in the last paragraph on 121 to the idea of principles, everlasting government of its own universe in the oneness of divine science. Line 31. Astronomical order simply symbolizes the action of this government. And therefore, as we turn over to 122.2, this is the real science of being, little b, described on line 4 as the great facts of life, capital L. Sense evidence seems to reverse these facts, but the facts themselves reverse the apparent reversal, and on lines 6 and 7 reveal heaven and earth one, one in identity. Therefore, what we are engaged with, line 8, is the science of soul, in which life, capital L, line 26, goes on unchanged, and being, little b, is eternal. The spiritual sense of life, little l, in the marginal heading, is the inseparability in science of life, little l, from life, capital L, that is to say, of man from God. and thus the severing of the jugular vein does not kill life, because this has never been severed from life. As we learned on the opening page of the chapter, the body's life, little l, is life, capital L. Now the paragraph 122.29 to 123.10 seems to sum up for us what we've been seeing regarding the relation of soul to body through all that symbolism of astronomy. The order of science, line 11, being the true astronomical order as we had it there on 121.28. Now all this while, the verity of mind, line 11, has been showing us how it is that matter seems to be but is not. What is the verity, truth, of this infinite universal mind? Surely it is divine science, line 12, in which the human and divine are one and inseparable, and therefore man is not made up of matter. The only way matter can seem to be is if, in belief, the human and divine are severed. And thus, divine science raises our thought above physical theories, excludes matter, resolves things into thoughts, and replaces the objects of material sense with spiritual ideas. The systematic healing workings of this appear in Christian Science, line 16. The two parts of the revelation of which remind us so much of the workings of those two translations back on 115 and 116. So, the two parts of the revelation are discovery and proof, stressing once more the true inseparability of statement and proof, letter and spirit, declaration and demonstration, which we have been feeling so much throughout this chapter. First, the discovery of the overall divine science of mind healing, and second, the timeless operation of the divine principle involved in the present demonstration of healing in Christian Science. This wonderful little paragraph, 123.30 to 124.2, where we see that truth, capital T, is the principle of all science, little s. And that this fact is the very basis of Christian Science. The basis of Christian Science is that truth, where everything is forever whole, where there is no possible departure of a part from the whole, therefore no fragmentary matter universe, therefore no material science or sciences as such. This is the principle of all science, little s. Hence no science is really material. All science is, in reality, Christian Science, just as all truth, little t, is found in and of and inseparable from truth, capital T. this truth, capital T, of all truth, little t, this science, capital S, of all science, little s, is the divine self-knowledge. In contrast to, and now we go over to 124.3, human knowledge, which is what physical science, so-called, is, and which is a Samson shorn of his strength. Now, Samson's great strength lay, we remember, in the fact that his 7 locks of hair had never been cut from his head. And when the beguiling Delilah, as it were, severed them from their roots, his strength was immediately expended, and the Philistines blinded him. The fascinations of physical science must never appear to do this to Christian science. Sight is dependent on light not being cut off from its source, and so is strength. It is as if, back on 123.9, Samson became the most absolutely weak and inharmonious creature in the universe, whereas in his true identity, Samson typifies the spiritual strength of science itself, God and man one and inseparable, body uncut sexually from its controlling soul, idea never severed from principle, truth, little t, incapable of departing from truth, capital T, and therefore of being reversed into its opposite error. The uncapitalized ideas of the numerals of infinity, indivisible from the capitalized 7, remember the 7 locks of hair, the 7 of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Now, unlike Christian science, physical science, dependent for its support on organization, 124 line 5, is a thing of discord and death, line 10, instead of life. And therefore, immortal spirit, line 13, which gives us the true idea of nature and the inseparability of everything in the universe from everything else, silences blind human knowledge or physical science. And this means that science itself, line 14, interprets the universe understandably from the standpoint of its principle, whereas physical science explains exactly the same universe enigmatically on the basis of physical science. Why? Because there is only one universe. It makes no difference how the physical senses interpret the forces of adhesion, cohesion, and attraction. These, in science, are properties of mind belonging exclusively to principle, where everything in the universe is one with everything else. The mind, which is principle, owns all the forces of nature as its own property. Therefore, these are not forces of matter, and therefore the one unfragmentable spirit, line 25, is the life, substance, and intelligence of everything beheld by the physical senses. And thus the one divine science, line 28, restores all things to their rightful home and classification in the one divine mind whose properties they are. from this sense of universe, or if you like, macrocosm, we come to the microcosm sense of the elements and functions of the physical body and the physical world. And the whole of page 125 concerns the changes which science will inevitably bring about in human experience as mortal mind changes its beliefs. On line 1 there. Now line 15. The visible manifestation will at last be man governed by soul, not by material sense. If in reflecting this government of soul, man is self-governed, then clearly it is soul and not sense which is man's real self. And this reflection means that man is subordinate to spirit, line 18, and nothing else. And therefore, as we turn over now to 126:6, he beholds himself God's reflection, even as mortals see their own reflection in a glass. And therefore the problem of nothingness or dust to dust will be solved by truth, little t, the reflection of truth, capital T, man, God's reflection, coming from, returning to, always remaining one with God. And therefore all science, 126:8, is divine. Everything around us is, in science, the reflection of God, the echo of spirit, line 11, and not what human belief says it is at all. Now down to line 22, two things concern us in Christian science. One is Christian science itself, and two, the application of Christian science to the cure of disease. This implies, of course, that Christian science itself is absolute. Synonymous terms for God, such as mind on line 24, truth on line 25, cannot possibly be other than absolute. And solely because of this, we see the effects of truth, line 24, demonstrated through mind, mind is cause, therefore, on the health, longevity, and morals of men in accordance with the teachings of the Bible. The straight and narrow way of truth, line 30, lies surely in the undeviating, uncompromising absoluteness of truth. Remember how the healing principle back on pages 107 and 109 was declared to be absolute and divine. Four references suddenly to Christianity, top of 127, the marginal heading being Science and Christianity. Very soon now we shall be in the theology section of the chapter, and this will naturally stress the true idea of Christianity. The application of the word science to Christianity, 126 at the bottom there, line 32, means that science is Christian science, or the science of Christianity. This, of course, is Christianity as it really is, and not the sectarian sense of Christianity as merely constituting Christendom. And what this teaches us is that truth, little t, line 6, is identical with science, capital S, in comprising a knowledge or understanding of God as all, capital A, in all, little a. Now, in applying the term science to Christianity, and thereby arriving at Christian science, we have that which in itself is absolute and divine, applying itself spontaneously to the healing of disease and therefore to the salvation of humanity. The different ways, paragraph beginning 127:9, the different ways in which the term science is used throughout the textbook. Divine science, spiritual science, Christ science or Christian science, or science alone, are, as we see on line 12, synonymous terms for everything relating to God as mind. Mind specifically because science is true knowledge. It is truth itself. Mind's own knowledge of itself. When science is specifically designated Christian science, this, as confirmed for us now on line 15, is science as applied to humanity, which is much the same statement as the one about the application of the word science to Christianity at the beginning of the preceding paragraph. This is science itself, exempt from all evil that is absolute, but nevertheless healing humanity of all sin, sickness, and death. Now on line 23, what humanity mistakenly thinks of as physical science is, in fact, all truth, little d, which has its origin in divine mind. Hence, truth, little t, is not human in a matter sense at all, but is what humanity is divinely as it emanates from divine mind. And therefore science, which is all truth, little t, is a divine utterance. It is in fact the Theos Logos, or God himself speaking as man, as we come to it soon in the theology section. Over to 128. Science, line 4, is practical science in the marginal heading solely because it is Christian science on line 8, and as such is the science of being, little b, line 15, or science applied to humanity as we had it on the previous page. Science doing for humanity all those liberating, extending, elevating, freeing things which are detailed in this paragraph. And all this comes to pass when, on line 22, what is spoken of as our knowledge of truth, escapes like an odor into the surrounding atmosphere in order to be beneficent. In other words, our knowledge of truth must escape from being in belief, our knowledge of truth, and must be found instead to be truth's own knowledge of itself. For in this case, it already fills and constitutes all the atmosphere there is. Truth's unbottled knowledge of its own infinitude is the very atmosphere of spirit, which therefore we can freely breathe, and into which, through these two paragraphs, we find ourselves raised and extended. And we come to the logic of Christian Science on 129:1-2. The logic, which has the mathematical precision of an accurately stated syllogism. This logic is the truth, capital T, line 5, being ever filled with truth, little t, ever truthful, contains no error in premise or conclusion, and this becomes the fixed principle, 128:27, on which science, mind's own knowledge of itself, rests. Now, a syllogism is made up of a major premise, a minor premise, and a conclusion. A syllogism balances deductive reasoning from the general to the particular with inductive reasoning from the particular to the general. For example, as we find it in the dictionary, every virtue is laudable. Now that's a major premise or proposition. Kindness is a virtue. Now that's a minor premise or proposition. And here we have reasoned deductively from the general to the particular. Every virtue is laudable. Kindness is a virtue. The conclusion, which involves inductive reasoning from the particular back to the general again, is that therefore kindness is laudable. And so we have in the syllogism an illustration of this cyclic movement of spiritual consciousness, or where thought comes from and returns to mind, God. The cyclic movement of science as divine science and Christian science, which is really the underlying theme of the whole of this first section of the chapter, because this is what heals humanity. Accordingly, science, truth, overthrows pantheism, the doctrine that the material universe and all that this includes is God. And therefore, on line 21, what we must do is abandon the superficial pharmaceutical practice of compounding elements together in order to make a whole, and instead come up out of the depths of ontology itself, the science of real being, where everything is already joined together, is already compound and whole, is already of the nature of science. And as we turn over to 130, line 2, this is having mind for our mind, instead of having just a petty intellect. In the paragraphs from 137 to 25, science, divine science, Christian science, together show forth the harmony of principle. And this, on line 22, is seen as the ability of spirit to make the body harmonious. This ability is that of spirit, because spirit's body, already harmonious, is the only kind of body there really is. Now the little child can accept this truth, little t, line 19, because unlike the adult, his thought is not already so full of material beliefs that spiritual facts cannot enter. We're merging quickly now into the theology section, where we see over there on 131:20 how these things are hidden from the wise and prudent, but are revealed unto babes. And so it will be with the revelation of the rock to Simon Peter in a moment when we come to it. The theology section has so much to do with a true childlike faith in God. There, 130:21, and with the true idea of body as taught through the symbol of church. And therefore, there surely isn't a more appropriate concept to take us from the science section to the theology section then that last capitalized expression in this science section, namely the science of soul, there on 131:8. For as we found through all that astronomical symbolism, it is the science of soul which specifically gives us the true idea of body, and which reverses the evidence of the senses regarding sensuous man. 131:8. All right. Theology, then. Theology. Theos, God. Logos, Word. Word of God. Or God Himself speaking. It has to be emphasized in this second section of the chapter that the science of the first section is indeed God and not man speaking, or else it is not science. And of course, it's the unmasking of animal magnetism in the fifth chapter which makes it possible for us to understand this, otherwise we're playing into the hands of the talking serpent, and men are speaking as gods. Remember, ye shall be as gods, says the talking serpent. Accordingly, in this section on theology, we arrive at the true idea of religion as being indispensable to that of science. The religion of love, capital L, as it is called in the text, accentuates the living spirit of science as that which maintains the coherent, bonded wholeness of science. The word religion, as we realize, is from a root meaning to bind. And this is the significance of the capitalized term Christianity, the third side of the holy city. Science must be found to be the science of Christianity, or Christian science, where the whole universal body of man is bonded together in love. Or else, as we were told at the top of page 113, it disintegrates into a dead body, a dead letter, pulseless, cold, inanimate. Turning to the text then on 113:13, Christian science, science in its non-sectarian unity as the religion of love, is come already after the manner of God's appointing, and does not come through rival, conflicting Christian churches, which would be after the manner of man's appointing. He came unto his own, and his own received him not, line 17. That is as true of the sectarian Christian Science Church as of any other so-called Christian denomination. It comes not through the wise and prudent, but through the thought that belongs to the heavenly kingdom. As we had it back there on 130:25, namely that of the little child or babe state of thought. Christian science, defined on 131:23, as the spirit, little s, of the Christ, is the living Christ body, the divine identity of humanity or man. And this is what makes it the science of soul, as we found it on 131:9. Now over the page to 132:3, this living Christ spirit is the divine power that heals, and its healing effects are that the blind receive their sight, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, and the dead are raised. Such effects have as their cause divine mind, line 12. And what these effects do is to prove the unity of God, which is the divine principle of harmony. They prove the unity of God. Well, whether it's yesterday or today, Pharisaism thrusts this idea of the unity of God out of its synagogues. Sectarianism necessarily rejects the idea of unity, or, as in the marginal heading, Christ. That which is rejected is defined variously in this paragraph as the spiritual idea, line 14, idealism, line 24, the true idea of God, line 25, and perhaps most important of all, in the teaching of the second section of the chapter, the Son of Man, on line 26. Well, the Pharisees reject it. John the Baptist wavers from one side to the other. But the childlike faith of the Samaritan woman and the Roman centurion, on 133:3, they accept. Say the word only, and my servant shall be healed, the centurion said to Jesus. Faithfully accepting that word and works, statement and proof, letter and spirit are immediately, simultaneously one. The mind which is principle, the principle which is mind, come again in the paragraph beginning 133:8, just as we had them there on 132:12. The principle of the unity of God. The principle of one mind, as against many minds, brings the healings detailed in this paragraph. Israel really has her origin in the mind which is principle. And this means that her real Judaism is the opposite of any limited form of a national or tribal religion, as it is described there on 133:20. In fact, Judaism finds its true identity in Christianity itself. The foundation of which is the all-inclusiveness of spirit, line 26, and not the exclusiveness of matter. And therefore what Jesus demonstrated was that there is nothing outside of God, line 28. Everything, everywhere, is going on inside of God. This is spirit. Jesus proved that he was equal with God because he proved that man has no other ego, no other self but God. Now this truth, little t, 134:2 over the page, this reality of humanity is what priestly learning, in the marginal heading there, seeks to crucify. But truth, little t, which is the only thing really that can bear witness to truth, capital T, on line 5, cannot, in fact, be martyred or persecuted. Christianity, line 10, where we find the true idea of man, and therefore truth, little t, consists of the whole body of the followers of Christ, truth, capital T, line 9, and this body is therefore full of the Christ power. Whereas the man-made doctrines of the opponents of Christianity are devoid of this power. And this constitutes the true logos, line 21. The theos logos, which appears as Christian Science. The Word of God, or Logos, the declaration of what I, God, am, is the work of God in Christian Science. Where the natural law of harmony overcomes discord. Nothing supernatural or preternatural about it. Not above or beyond nature, but nature itself as it really is. Raising Lazarus, stilling the tempest, and so on, are not really miracles at all, but operations of the natural law of science, backed by divine authority. They are the showing forth of primal order, the science of God's unchangeable law, their spiritual evolution, as against material nature, exercising divine power. We come there to the end of paragraph 135, line 10. This is truth which is Christ. In the paragraph beginning line 11, casting out evils and, in consequence, healing the sick. Because in order to heal the sick, truth must cast out of consciousness the myth that man was ever, at a point of material birth, cast out of God, or that truth ever became less than whole. The forever unimpaired wholeness of truth heals. And therefore we come to the Holy One of Israel, line 18. The wholeness of the one and the oneness of the whole, just as we had the unity of God back there on page 132. And what this amounts to in practice, in the last paragraph of 135, is again the unity of science and Christianity. In the marginal heading, the Holy One of Israel is really the unity of science and Christianity. Christianity is science. Science is Christian Science, one in identity, or identical, as it is expressed on line 25. Christianity, being science, cannot possibly, therefore, be a special ritualistic gift. It's line 27. And what makes Christianity science is the fact that Christianity is impartial divine love. Line 29. Its words and its works, one in truth, just like light. Line 32, circling forth from and circling back to light. Cycles of divine light. Now, over the page to 136, because this describes the Christ mission, in the marginal heading. Mission from the Latin mittere, to send. The Father hath sent me, Jesus said. I circle forth from the Father, I circle back to the Father, but I never leave the Father in doing so. And therefore, the foundation, line 2, or principle, on which Jesus established his church or demonstrated what body really is Christ healing. The principle itself, line 4, declares that there is no intelligence, action, nor life separate from God. And this describes Jesus' religion. Line 3, religio, to bind man, wholly bound to God, human, inseparable from the divine. And therefore, the question, line 9, how did Jesus heal the sick, is really already answered. The world rejects the true answer simply because it prefers personality to principle. Men, in the plural, personalize the Son of Man, singular, and therefore they cannot identify who or what it is that thus casts out evil and heals the sick. Evil is cast out, and therefore the sick are healed by understanding that man is forever, as it were, cast in and never out of God. In other words, humanity is not fallen man. This is divine science. Line 22. Herod beheaded John the Baptist, but he cannot behead divine science. Christ the head and Christianity the body are one and indivisible in divine science. So herein lies the power of truth, capital T, 137:2, healing the sick, which the senses see as Jesus teaching and demonstrating the truth, little t, of being. The truth of being, little t, little b, is man showing forth the power of truth, capital T, God. And therefore, the Immaculate Teacher stood before the world, the victor over sickness, sin, disease, death, and the grave, the lot. truth's indivisible wholeness makes it the victor over every possible belief in fragmentation. And therefore, Jesus yearns to be identified spiritually, impersonally. The world as such cannot do this, but the disciples, standing for the world spiritually regenerated through identification with the wholeness of Christ or truth, can. And hence the question is repeated, whom say ye the disciples that I, the Son of Man, am? And it is repeated also that to be able to answer this question correctly is to know who or what it is that is able to do the work so mysterious to the personalizing mind of men. Well, Simon, son of Jonah, is the disciples' mouthpiece for the correct identification of the Son of Man. Why? Because apparently of his impetuosity. His impetuosity, line 16, this impetuous disciple, line 26. To be spiritually impetuous is to be divinely impelled. To allow a divine precipitation to take place in consciousness. Simon's childlike thought is open and receptive to the natural and spontaneous self-revelation of truth. The word precipitate, which describes impetuous in the dictionary, it's a chemical term which conveys the idea of a solid concretion appearing in a chemical solution. And of course, the form of this concretion in spiritual consciousness is the living, the true and living rock, as we have it there in the marginal heading on line 28. Thou, Son of Man, Simon says, art the Christ, the Son of the living God. You are the Spirit, little s, of capital truth, life, and love, which heals mentally. In other words, the Son, capital S, which man, in the singular, meaning generic man or woman, gives birth to, is himself as the Son of God. This is the concrete, non-abstract revelation of truth itself, which does not come from the flesh and blood sense of man, but from God, from my Father which is in heaven. So the order of the revelation is truth, life, love. Christ truth, the actual concretion or son of life and love, the Father, Mother, God. Ideally, Simon, son of Jonah, has yielded to the Son of Man, who is the Son of God. In Christ, truth, where God and man are one, Son of Man is identical with Son of God. And therefore, in this concrete revelation of truth, love shows humanity the way of deathless life. Simon's identity is therefore Peter, the living Petros, or stone or rock, which is Christ or truth. Now, this true estimate of divinity and humanity one, says Jesus, is the divine foundation on which the universal body of mankind is built in Christianity. And it is the means whereby, over the page now to 138.2, a true human society is brought into being, built not on personal sense, but on principle. In other words, the principle which is life, truth, and love. Line 6, God as Father, Son, and Mother in Himself and nothing outside. This is the rock-like healer of the fallen sense of man. No one is an outsider, line 11. Everyone is an insider, therefore. The concept of men, that is outside of God, gives way to man, the Son of Man, who is the Son of God inside. End of recording on this tape. Please now turn to the second tape of the Science, Theology, Medicine chapter.